Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Masters of Our Domain, the podcast which was formerly about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about media about the classical world, stuff about the classical world, or whatever we feel like talking about that week. I am Milo Edwards and I'm joined as ever by my intrepid co-hosts, Phoebe Ryan, Patrick Wyman. How are we doing?
Good.
Pretty good. I've got some sun, got some of that vitamin D.
Ooh.
Feeling good. Yes. Ready to roll.
Could not be more of a contrast with last week.
Yeah, no, much better than last week. Though one of the kids on the basketball team I coached did shove the referee during the game on Sunday.
Ooh.
So not great. Mm. Not great. We're going to have to figure out how to do some discipline on that one.
A kid who's got moxie.
Jesus Christ, man. These kids, these children. I may have gotten myself in over my head with this particular group.
Oh yeah, you're in deep.
Yeah. So it turns out you can, if the kids are like biddable and like listen, mm-hmm. then you can teach them a sport that they're not good at.
Sure.
But if they're both not good at the sport and they don't want to listen, that's a problem.
Sure.
So really you're looking for kind of the Goldilocks zone of not knowing what they're doing, but being like locked in and willing to listen to what you have to say. They are not in that Goldilocks zone. Very much the opposite.
They couldn't be less interested, in fact.
No, they do not know ball and okay. they do not have any interest in learning ball, mm-hmm. which is a problem. In the context of playing a sport,
you could be in the midst of creating, you know, the Millwall of basketball teams. Some of the most savage children to have ever played the game. Like, no good at basketball, but excellent at violence. That could be your selling point.
Mm. Yeah. Honestly, that thought did occur to me after the first couple of practices where I was trying to show them how to set a screen. So you run up to the person, you've got your arms kind of in front of you and you use your body to block the defender to create space for the offensive player. Mm. And repeatedly, the children just hurled their bodies into the defender over like, I'm like, that's not what we're doing here. That's not how any of that works at all. That's a foul. They'll take you off the court and eject you if you just hurl yourself face first into a player on the other team. This is a contact sport, but it not in that sense.
Well, I've got a suggestion for where you could take these kids. You could
sure.
You could set up a kind of sports corruption ring.
Mm.
Get them to take a fall. Mm-hmm. At the final minute.
Oh, you know, the area where I live is full of the most degenerate gamblers you've ever met. Like on multiple occasions, I've discussed with the fellow dads how we could set up some sort of betting thing on our children's youth sports.
Oh, yeah.
Phoebe, that is in the works.
Yes.
We are moving on that. Yeah. So I'll keep you updated, but I'm figuring we're no more than 6 months away.
You need to run a book on your child.
Hell yeah.
What the hell kind of dad are you?
You used to be able to bet on the Little League World Series in the United States. Until I think it was probably 12, 15 years ago, they made it so that you couldn't, but yeah, you used to be able to bet on Little League World Series games.
Amazing.
The things we lost in the fire, eh?
That's America, baby. If we can't monetize 12-year-olds playing baseball poorly, then why are we doing it?
Exactly. The sort of question perhaps the Greek gods might have at one point asked themselves.
They should have like a soft play betting shop that like gets set up like next to Ladbrokes.
Yeah, kind of like a Kidzania type thing, but it's like the British high street. You've got betting shop, off license,
pawn shop.
Exactly. Like the kind of shit you actually get, like XL Bully.
Yeah, and then
I'm so excited to bring my children to London to experience that.
And then you get the kids in there, like, you know, selling their baby Maury two-way zipper stretch suits.
So this is going to be a problem because my son loves sports and he loves numbers and he loves being right.
So betting
really encompasses all of his like unique little pathologies.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping I can keep the knowledge of that from him for some
time.
He'll
be the greatest bookie that ever there was.
Oh, dude. So you know, the in the United States, you have the NCAA basketball tournaments, like the college basketball tournament they do every year, where it starts with 64, 68 teams, and eventually it's down to just two teams. It's called March Madness.
Yeah.
So you can do what's called a bracket challenge, where you pick the winners of the games to pick all the way down to who you think is going to be the national champion. And usually you do it with your friends or like within a family. So my son won our family's bracket challenge last year, and he has not stopped talking about it since then. And I was like, oh, this is your two favorite things, sports and being right. Like, this is just the worst case scenario for us here. Like, we really stumbled ass backwards into that one.
Well, you could fit him up as like a kind of corrupt boxing manager. Just get him like a sheepskin coat. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some big jewelry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do have a sheepskin hat from the Caucasus, a papaka, which he regularly wears around the house.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
You're raising an MMA baby.
The thoughts occurred to me. He's not as big a fan of contact as his sister is, though. She's really the one who's physical when it comes to it. She'll like fall off things and just bounce up. I'm okay. Like, all right, okay.
I don't care what they want to be when they grow up. While they're under my roof, they're Dagestani.
That's absolutely correct. Now you're getting it.
I'm raising them on grilled meats, UFC.
Yeah, and crushing poverty.
That's right.
That's really the key to understanding the North Caucasus as a center of combat sports talent is, you know, you get all the like cultural predilection for violence and combat sports training, but it's the poverty that pushes you over the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's why you have the baby betting shops to tackle tackle or exploit the poverty depending on what perspective you're coming from.
Yeah, mostly exploit. I mean, we can't solve all the problems of the world, Phoebe.
No one
would expect you to, not until he's at least, you know, 12.
And what would a baby bet on? That's the big question, really.
Oh, I've got some thoughts on that. Ooh. But we should probably talk about the answer.
let's talk about the Greek gods.
Let's talk about the Greek gods.
And their shenanigans.
Yeah, what would they bet on?
They do have shenanigans.
Natural disasters.
Yeah, natural disasters.
Casualty counts from natural disasters. Like, they would 100% be setting lines on
insider
that.
Insider trading, real Pelosi vibes from the from the Greek gods there.
I was going to say, you're going to need to be less specific if you want to talk about corruption among the American political class. Yeah.
the start of an Olympus stag do. Zeus saying, okay, all right. How many women do you think I can persuade to shag me if I am a swan? How many?
This is why you need people who know the market, because I don't know where I would set that line. I don't have any idea where I would start with that.
Yeah. would you want to go near a woman who sees a swan and is like, yeah, is that what you,
I mean,
oh, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
It really depends, as we've discussed many times while making this show, really depends on the MILF situation.
How hot is this swan? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a hot swan, I'd be like, okay, well, I guess I can, not for me, but I can see it.
Yeah. You don't want a kind of like slightly kind of,
like a mangy
like
swan.
A kind of unattractive swan.
Men claim to be open-minded and they won't even fuck a swan. You know, you claim to be into MILFs, but you ignore the swan MILFs.
It's racism is what it is.
Yeah. Exactly.
We won't stand for that here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do something with like incel, volcel and like Cygnus, but it's not working.
Oh yeah.
It's a sin cell.
It's tough, but I give you credit for trying. Yeah. You're trying to climb Olympus there.
Yeah.
And we don't climb Olympus because we would not like what we find up there.
No, we would not.
Well, aside from Hera, who is just, I mean, outstanding MILF territory here.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, she's I honestly, it speaks to something deep in my soul.
She kind of reminds me of Emma Thompson.
Yeah.
Would you call Emma Thompson MILF territory?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah.
Really interesting. I would put Emma Thompson kind of hot sort of hot governess, hot primary school teacher.
Are you saying a hot primary school teacher can't be a MILF?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I feel like it's a completely different genre.
Okay, so we've got a question of classifications here. Interesting. No, I think a kind of a matron or governess vibe can still qualify as a MILF. Mm-hmm. For me, the operative thing there. yes. No, I feel like the desire is the core thing there, rather than a specific MILF aesthetic.
I feel like the MILF has to be a lady of leisure.
See, to me, that's more of a cougar. I'd call that more of a cougar than a MILF.
Because the cougar is an age bracket. You can be a young-ish MILF.
Oh, do you think a cougar has to be like, you know, sort of over 50? Is that the?
I would say, yeah, over 50 a cougar has to be. I would say so. And a cougar also has to have a fancy for younger men, which a MILF doesn't. A MILF desires are her own business. Yeah. You can be a MILF with a partner your own age or older or younger. You could be a celibate MILF. You could just be, as Marlo puts it, culturally a MILF.
A celibate MILF. Get thee to the MILFery.
Yeah.
Like a hot nun could qualify as a MILF.
Exactly. Yeah. You fast on MILF Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
You go to midnight MILF mass on Christmas Eve, but you know
MILF night mass.
MILF night mass, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd like to go there.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely, yeah.
Great
place to network.
Like the cougar is both circumscribed by age and is also a sexual proclivity. A MILF, not necessarily. Okay. The direction of travel is towards her. So like, okay, so if you forgive me for referencing Burgess' Ways of Seeing, the MILF is an object and the cougar is the subject.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Here's my question. Can a woman self-identify as a MILF? No. Then if,
I don't think so.
No, that's
I don't think so. No, I think it's some I think it's a I think it's a label. I think it's externally imposed.
You have to, it's like peer reviewed. Like the Council of MILFs has to sort of elect you a fellow of it.
Five other MILFs have to agree that you're a MILF.
You got to form a consensus.
It's like an honor culture where honor is your honor is the collective possession of the whole group. Okay. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, this makes
you
sense.
Need a MILF quorum.
Yeah,
of course.
God, we have made. I don't think our achievements in furthering the theoretical understanding of MILFs has been recognized.
I think we've really made
a lot of progress here, and I for one would like to see some sort of recognition from the wider world of that.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. I mean, presumably we are anthropologically must be the leading light in MILF studies, surely.
Yeah.
Yep,
surely. Yeah, I would think so.
I'm sensing a spin-off here.
Why aren't we invited to MILF conference? Anyway.
we can't get into that now. As a taster of our other podcast on the Axes of Attraction Network, MILF Matters.
Reporting live from MILF conference.
Yeah.
I did want to make sure that I got out there how attractive I find Hera.
Okay, yeah. Well,
just wanted to as a baseline thing, I feel like that's going to be important context for the next several episodes.
Interesting. Okay. Well, you know what? Fine.
Yeah. Pat's looking for a little mummy in his life, and aren't we all?
And that's a weird thing to say, but okay.
I mean, he's not wrong, though.
For a second, I thought you were talking about what Pat said. I was like, a bit harsh. And then I realized you were talking about what I said. And I was like, oh, yeah, fair enough.
Look, if he were wrong, I would have called him on it. He's not wrong. It's a statement of fact.
Look, she has mommy vibes.
Who does Hera?
She really does. Mm. She really does. Mm. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Well,
and this isn't an age thing. Crucially, this is like a vibe thing.
Okay. Yep. Look, you know what? I feel like we have really got this established as something which we're talking about. Right. The first thing I want to say before we get into the weeds of this episode is that last week we were talking about the lawlessness of this show, and by lawlessness I mean lawlessness.
With an RE.
Exactly. Hard R law.
That's right.
We were talking about that, and Pat was saying that one of the things that he was enjoying about watching it is like the extent to which like they just don't, they're just like fully fucking magic realisming this bitch. They're like not like, they're not giving you any information like, where does the god's power from? Where, like, what, like, what's going on? Like, they're not doing any of that. Like, he did a really good Games Workshop nerd's voice in order to indicate what he would.
Oh yes, it's you cannot in fact move your guys that far, that you are rolling too many dice. That's too much damage. They don't have the hit points to deal with that.
Exactly. Now I regret to inform you that in this episode, not only does that completely go out of the window, and we have finally an explanation of the source of the, not just the power of the gods, but the source of the gods' immortality. And I regret to inform you doubly that this explanation is A, super fucking annoying, B, doesn't make any fucking sense, and
fantastic.
C is, I would determine, not even especially original. It reminds me an awful lot of a kind of plot twist in something else, which we can get into if you want. But the explanation of what's going on with the Hall of the Dead and so on and so forth, we will say what the explanation is. Like I said, this really, really wound me right up, because it really is stupid, and it's really stupid in a kind of a I am 15, I have just discovered Reddit atheism, and I have come up with, well, you know, there would be no wars without religion. Okay, fine. Which is an interesting analytical point if you are 15, yes, and remain neurologically 15.
It's very coexist bumper sticker, isn't it?
It's very, well, you know, you know something that I saw the other day. What has had a glorious revival? It's the Pastafarian people.
Really? Yeah. They're back, huh?
The noodly appendage guys.
Oh.
Yeah.
What a
blast from the past. It's like
this is real, like, Zoomers won't remember territory. Like, yeah, people getting their driving license photo with a colander on their head.
Well, you know what else I saw? I saw somebody who must have been about 22 the other day wearing a fucking Von Dutch hat.
Oh yeah, that's coming back.
God
damn it.
Yeah. Mm. God damn it. And like, this is the problem. This is the problem with there being this kind of weird Schrodinger's place between too much cultural memory and not enough of it. We should have fucking burnt every Von Dutch cap. We should have melted them down. It should be like impossible to find them. This should be like one of Domitian's coins.
Yeah, damnatio memoriae, exactly. for the Von Dutch face.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't want to see a fucking 22-year-old wearing a fucking Von Dutch cap. And that is sort of the general vibe of what's happening here. It's basically a bunch of people who imagine that they have invented the concept of there being maybe socio-historical problems with hierarchical religious practice, and it pissed me off, to tell you the truth, and That's my opening statement.
I'm completely on board with that. I fucking hated this. It has sucked much of the joy of this show out. I also think that if you were going to do this, why would you not frame the whole show around this? Why would you make it the reveal instead of the baseline thing that we're dealing with as we go through
Absolutely.
It? Absolutely. Like, that's so, because it's not that interesting as a reveal.
No.
If your point from the beginning is the gods are just sucking the life out of you and they suck as entities, like, lead with that, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's your argument. Lead with it. It's not interesting enough to make us wait six fucking episodes to get to the reveal here. Like, it's
Dr. Wyman too early on that Hera's planning on sucking the life out of him. He won't withstand it.
Yeah, no, I would have liked that in episode one, because sign me up. Really and truly, I did not care for any of this.
Okay, so yeah, so really, really briefly, we discover that and one of the many reasons this doesn't make any sense is that the whole point of this show is to be try and be not accurate in terms of the retellings of the stories, because as we have determined quite consistently, there's not a lot of research going on in that vein, which is completely fair enough. If you want to do that, there are some very, very wonderful and extremely interesting academic texts about Greek myth that you can read. There is absolutely no reason for a dumb TV show to be 1,000% accurate about a retelling of a Greek myth. That's fine. That's fine by me. However, considering that they've done quite a lot of work to kind of at least get the vibe right, at least make you feel like you're potentially watching people whose personal subjectivity and personal agency is an irrelevance, because they are at the mercy of the gods and they're at the mercy of their prophecies and they're at the mercy of fate. So it actually doesn't really matter what you think about any of these characters. I made the comparison to the Aeneid and the episode that Marlo and I did on our own, which is that Aeneas doesn't matter. What matters is the eventual founding of Rome. The reason that Aeneas is not an interesting character in the Aeneid compared to Achilles in the Iliad, compared to Odysseus, compared to basically any other Greek hero, the reason that you're just I don't get any kind of sense of this guy, is that he is a cog in the grand wheel of history. His role is to set the ball in motion for the eventual glorious founding of Rome.
He's an ensemble player. He's not a glory hunter. It's not about me. It's about the work we do.
He's Paul Scholes.
That is the comparison he gets all the time, I would say, you know?
I'd say so. I think so.
Yeah, when Paul Scholes went down to the underworld and visited the dead, and they were all like, I would rather play for Manchester City than be down here amongst the dead.
Than be king of all the breathless dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah, so... you're meant to feel a little bit like you're going a bit insane while you're watching it, because everyone is at the mercy of the gods. You're at the mercy of the gods while you're watching it, because they keep doing these awful, cruel things that you keep having to look at. So that's fun. Fine. And then they come up with the fact that the frame and the concept of rebirthing, a kind of ancient Greek reincarnation, has been invented by the gods as a way of maintaining their control over the populace. And actually, what happens after you go through the frame is that your soul gets automatically, the process has been industrialized, your soul gets sucked out of you, and that goes into the god water, and they drink that, and that's what keeps them immortal, and that's what they can exert control over humanity by persuading them that if they do their due diligence and make their sacrifices and mark their festivals and propitiate the gods, then they will be reborn into a better life. Which, okay, first of all, like I said, is very, very Reddit atheism. And second, this is not even remotely close to anything in basically any of ancient classical Greek religion. The only exception is there is a possibility that there is some sense of a better afterlife, which was promised by the Eleusinian Mysteries. But we don't know what happened in the Eleusinian Mysteries. Do you know why? Because they were fucking mysteries. So it's just a guess. It's right there in the name.
The fundamental problem, and this is what it absolutely drives me nuts about it, because you're right. It's not just not in there. It is actively antithetical to the understanding of how ancient people experienced the gods, which is that the gods don't fucking need you.
They don't need you. They definitely don't need you to snack on. And so, like, considering that there wasn't this idea that if you propitiated the gods, then you would go to kind of like ancient Greek heaven or be ancient Greek reincarnated. We don't have a sense of like what they think the highest form of life might be. Like, they might think that's like a kind of, I don't know, like a koipu. Like, that might be the highest type of soul, according to the ancient peoples. So considering that the Greeks of the ancient world did not have this concept of living a good life and propitiating the gods in order to be reborn into a better life, so how are they claiming that the gods maintain control over the ancient peoples long enough to make it into the contemporary world? And also, presumably, although this is not made clear, presumably to weather Christianity for a kickoff, and if they've weathered Christianity by offering a kind of alternative to the kind of the sort of straightforward heaven hell, and which is much more, because like honestly, like if you're going down a kind of like, oh, you can either have heaven or hell, and like quite honestly, like the like the margins, I don't know. They are not margins that I'm willing to trust. Like, because what if like, you know, what if like really, really bad people are like being sent to the same place as people who break kind of some of the more kind of esoteric biblical rules? Like, I'm assuming that like at some point someone's like, okay, well, we've got the murderers in one room in hell, and then we've got the mixed fabric guys in another room. They're not all together, because that feels a little bit unreasonable, but it's still just hell. So if someone says to me, then you might come back as like a new person, you might come back as a koipu, you might come back as, I don't know, an inanimate object. Who's to say that
you just redid the Divine Comedy?
Yeah, you just be like, okay, fine.
You just put a Phoebe spin on the Divine Comedy.
Yeah.
Right here.
I'd be like, that's chill. Fine. So unless they're making explicit that this is supposed to have happened alongside Christianity, and how the gods have maintained their control from ancient times is through this frame thing, I don't think that is what they're saying, because I feel like if there were kind of alternatives to the religious system that's being described, I feel like that's something that you kind of have to say. So are they saying that at some point or another, the ancients were like, oh, okay, well, we no longer need to propitiate the gods, so the gods had to come up with like a reason for them to continue to do so, which doesn't make sense. If this is, because this is also suggested that this is the way that the gods retain their immortality. So without the constant feeding on the souls, are we saying that the gods are just what? Are just a people, a mortal? Then what are they? What are they meant to be? So that doesn't make any fucking sense. It's not clear whether or not just the big three gods know about this, and this is a kind of family secret, or whether like Dionysus also knows about it, because if Dionysus also knows about it, then his behavior is even more inexplicable. It's pretty annoying in general that they don't have any other gods in the show, because you could make a great character out of Apollo, or when we started, I was like, okay, they're gonna have like a thing where like, oh, the gods in the modern world. So we've got like Aphrodite doing OnlyFans. We've got like Athena is a fitness influencer, like etc. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's
yeah. No, that's kind of what I thought that we were gonna do here.
Athena is a fitness influencer who also is like one of those kind of girl soldiers who you kind of occasionally see on like TikTok, like that.
Great abs.
Yeah, exactly. Abs. Like, yeah, great. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, oh, like Artemis is a, I don't know, a chef.
Mm-hmm. She's got forearm tattoos.
Yeah, and she's like one of those like kind of hunter chefs. She hunts.
Yeah.
The stuff goes onto the table. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's called the restaurant is called like New Moon or something.
That's exactly what I was going to say. We're on the same page here.
It's a good job for them that the ancient Greek gods don't have a sort of Marvel style fandom. Otherwise, they would be there like, where's Asclepius? Where's Artemis? I want to be seeing these niche gods.
It's in the post credits scene.
But they're not niche gods. Because there are more than three Olympian gods. Like Zeus, Hera, and Poseidon are the they're the Capitoline triad, right?
Yeah, but there's like the
you know what? Maybe they're gods. Maybe they're not, because there's also because like you also need like you got Mars, you got Aphrodite,
Hephaestus,
Ares. We've been Ares.
To think of it as a pantheon is to miss how the ancient Greeks dealt with religion. Mm. Like, yes, there is a kind of a loose sense that these gods go together and they interact in the stories that people tell about them, but they're gods for fucking everything. Mm. They're the Danube has its own gods. Alexander the Great sacrifices to the gods of the Danube when he crosses the Danube in one of his first campaigns. Mm. Like, your little community has its own god that lives in the rocks or the trees or in a sacred spring or whatever. Like, there are gods fucking everywhere. That's the point of there being gods, is that they are forces that you don't really understand, that you try to humanize in order to have a relationship with them that is not them just lacing you with disaster every 6 minutes.
Yeah.
That's like the reason the mechanical aspect of this pisses me off so much is because the ancient Greeks did not think in terms of a mechanical relationship.
No.
Like, in broad terms, yes, okay, like I give something to the gods and in return, hopefully they'll do something good for me. But it's not mechanical. It's not quid pro quo. No. That's not how they understood it. They did it in order to try to get the gods to not fuck them over.
Yeah.
Which is not the same thing as I give you this and in return you have this power or whatever. Like, that's that the rules lawyering here drives me insane. And that's not the same thing as not having a sophisticated understanding of the gods or believing in them. Mm. You don't have to have a purely mechanical view to make that to make those things work. And every single bit of evidence that we have suggests that the vast majority of people living in this world took the gods with the utmost seriousness.
Yeah.
There's like, I was just reading about this for another project, but like, there was one year when the Romans first went to war in the East, they first sent armies to Macedonia around 200 BC to fight King Philip V. The Romans missed an entire campaigning season because the omens were bad. The generals elected consuls who were going to lead the armies to the East got bad omens, and they couldn't go until the omens were good. There is nothing mechanical or transactional about that relationship.
No.
In there, that's, we are terrified of the bad omens because the gods could really screw us over. And even good omens don't mean that good things are going to happen. No. Like, this is it is essential if you want to understand ancient people to get this shit through our heads, right? That on a basic level, they did not think of this as by giving the gods something, they are obligated to me in some way. You're like, you are literally hoping for the best by making a sacrifice.
I'd love to do a job for you. I really would. But, you know, the omens, they are, you see, if we were to go forward with that, we'd have to underpin the whole thing. You see, and that's for insurance, really. You see, if I went ahead with those omens, you know, I could be liable.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yep.
You know, I mean, signed up.
I want to know. I want to know who gave you the oracles last, because
you're never getting a cross path here with omens like that.
Yeah,
I'm just telling you that now. I could take your money, and you'd be no further forward.
I would be personally embarrassed to issue an oracle like that. But then I've got some professional pride. Not everyone does.
See, this is accurate. This is really getting at the heart of how ancient religion functioned. We're riffing, but the riffs are accurate in the broad sense of understanding how they made sense
as
of these relationships.
As I'm always saying to my critics, we're riffing. Riffs are accurate in the broader sense.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. Like the so yes, I too was extremely put off.
Yeah,
by pretty much everything that happened.
Yeah,
it's fucking
annoying. And also, yeah, like I said, like presumably this must be something that like Dionysus would have to be in on, because he has to be kept, like he's supposed to be like estranged from his dad. He has to be kept drinking this divine soul water in order to maintain his immortality. So yeah, why not just have the people of Crete having a similar relationship to the gods as the ancients did? Like, why does it have to be a kind of a, oh well, you know, the gods are evil and manipulating them, and they eat their soul and they eat their souls and they trick them into thinking that they're gonna be reincarnated into a better life. And there's also some like, and you know, I don't want to be mean, I don't want to be a bitch here, but there's also some like fucking Harry Potter bullshit about how Zeus absorbed a bit of his horrid dad's soul when he kills him, and then he's like, oh shit, how did I do that? And it's when he gets really angry and he can just drink the soul of whomsoever he kills, and then he puts Hades in charge of it. And the reason that that Hades had to manually extract Nax's soul in the previous episode is because the frame has become unstable and it's no longer working with the kind of the the Ghostbusters containment grid. It's no longer coping with the volume of souls that are traveling through. Again, like, why now? Like, there aren't like more dead people.
Stargate ass
explanation. So what's going to happen, apparently, is that Eurydice and Caeneus and maybe her mom and Dionysus and stuff, they're going to reveal the truth to the people, and they're going to either shut off the frame or stop people going through the frame, and the gods are no longer going to have that power. We don't know what's going to happen to them. Another thing which is fucking irritating, which is revealed in this episode, is that the gods are as beholden to the fates as the people. So again,
they're like the Eurocrats in Brussels, you know,
like the Eurocrats
they're all in red tape. Like, I'd love to help you. No, I really would. But, you know, it's these regulations.
Yeah. My hands are tied. My hands are tied. My liver's tied to a rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm shackled, quite literally.
I am literally shackled with a bunch of grapes just out of my reach.
It's a very, very confusing Boris Johnson speech. It's like, Brussels have got us shackled to a rock and they're eating our liver like a big eagle or something. And we're there for eternity. And we've got to do is break free.
That's good.
Thank you. 10 out of 10, no notes.
Yeah, no, that's just...
you've captured the man perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So here's my question. Considering that mm-hmm. now in episode 6 they have suddenly decided to like just fucking impose some like explanation on the top of something which really defies explanation. Like I said, the explanation makes no sense. So since they have decided to do that, they then need to explain some other stuff. So like, why are the gods beholden to prophecy? Where does the prophecy come from? Is it that the only entities who have any legitimate power that is not derived from eating the souls are the fates, which would not be an uninteresting point to make, but you have to do a little bit of, shall we say, narrative upholstery before you're really persuading me of that. And second, does this mean that the only characters who are legitimately immortal are the fates? Because presumably, if the fates are there, like writing out the little prophecies, which even the gods can't escape, which, by the way, is fucking stupid, but if even the gods can't escape their prophecies, then what are the fates up to? Are the fates also drinking the souls? Is every even partially divine being eating the souls? Are the nymphs eating the souls? Are like the people who are like the lads in charge of the fountains? Are like,
is satyrs?
Yeah. Does Achilles have like, have a diet soul drink that
a vial of some kind.
Yeah, that he like kind of like soul zero on. That he can't drink properly because he's got because can't have any of it go to his heel. Like,
yeah, someone's having Huel, but it's got a real like soylent quality to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, real real aftertaste to the Huel soul Huel.
Huel.
So the Huel.
Okay. Huel, the inventor of the soul drink.
That would be very funny.
Mm.
Okay, so yeah, this really makes me mad because the thing that I liked about this show was the sense of madness and being out of control, and that we exist in a world that is governed by forces we can't hope to understand and that act on us in ways that we don't have control over. That was the aspect of this that I liked, that I thought actually captured something of the ancient Greek worldview, and that really spoke to me. And I was willing to forgive a lot of what are pretty obviously plot holes and things of that nature. Like, I'm trying to enjoy it on its own merits at this point, but the pieces of it that I found so appealing, I are now slipping away as we reach the denouement here. I don't need a denouement. I want madness.
Yeah.
That was what I wanted from this show. And sure, they're not obligated to give me as a consumer what I want. But the pieces of it that I really liked are now kind of like, I don't need explanations for this. Mm. Like, just be magical realism. That's fine. You don't have to have a fucking show Bible that lays out exactly how mechanically every aspect of this works. I don't give a shit. That's not what I'm here for. Mm. And honestly, I think it misses the promise of the kind of universe that they've set up to now lean so heavily into that.
Yeah.
They're not obligated to give you as the consumer what you want. However, if you never give the consumers of the show what they want, that may be a problem. Maybe a problem for the longevity of your TV show.
Yeah, I recognize that my tastes are somewhat esoteric relative to your average consumer of a Netflix show. Sure. I get that. I've come to terms with that. But still, like, come on, guys. I feel like you could do this better.
Yeah, I think this is the point. Like, with this kind of show, you either want to attract the audience of people like us, or you want to attract some show lore nerds.
Yeah.
Or you want to attract a kind of a broader audience who will just like watch it kind of like for the fun of it, and they kind of vaguely remember like some of this stuff. They're a bit like, wasn't there like a horse? And they were like, guys in the horse. And I was like, how do you like how do you get guys in a horse without the horse getting like pissed off and trying to kick the guys, but the guys are in the horse's belly. Like, how do you even do that? Yeah, there's a bit that it keeps kind of like not committing to any one of the things that it could be doing.
Yeah. You know? Which raises the obvious question of who the fuck is this for?
Yeah, I don't presumably why it did not get recommissioned.
It did not get renewed for a second season.
That's the word. It did not go through the frame.
It didn't get renewed. It didn't go through the frame.
It did not go through the frame. Yeah.
I'm on board with all of this because, like, I want to like this so bad.
Yeah.
And there's so many aspects of it that I love. I think the casting is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, the casting's really good, apart from fucking Eurydice.
Yeah, she's kind of a downer. Yeah. But then I guess she's kind of supposed to be.
So. Orpheus as well. He sucks.
Yeah, I'm not hugely into that storyline.
I don't like him. I'm not that keen on the guy playing Poseidon.
I dig him. I think he's got precisely Poseidon? The right level of grease for this.
I want him to have a beard. Where's his beard?
Both metaphorically and literally.
Poseidon has a beard. Look, I'm not fucking having a clean-shaven Poseidon. That's perverse.
What do I know that actor from somewhere?
I'm pretty sure he's Maori. I think he's been in a bunch of things.
Oh.
Hmm. Cliff
Curtis.
I'm
fairly certain of that.
He's not called Cliff Curtis, surely. Surely.
What a name.
Can't be right.
Surely.
Not a traditional Maori name,
no.
no. Sort of very...
Well, that could be the colonialism.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine. It seems unlikely to me that the Maoris woke up one day and just thought Cliff Curtis. I imagine that's our fault. If I had to pin it on one nation, I'd say it's probably Britain's taking that one on the chin. He was in Training Day.
Don't put this on me, Milo. My dad's family's Indian.
Really? Yeah. He was in Training Day. Yeah. Yes,
and he was in The Meg. I think that's where I remember him from. The Meg. And Meg 2, The Trench, which I have also seen, both on planes.
Does he hilarious. Play the God of the Sea in The Meg?
Well, there is a sea connection here.
Yeah, that's
he's gotten typecast as an ocean guy.
If anything,
he's
quite
anti the sea, I would say, in The Meg. He's, you know, he's very much, he's on team land.
Yeah. He's a dry guy in The Meg.
Yeah, he's a dryad.
Yeah. Mr. Dry, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly.
I hate how much I love that line, Milo.
While licking the tip of his pencil, changing his name badge to Dungeon Master.
This is the kind of what you might call cheap heat that I'm bringing. I tell you what, this guy's been in a lot of movies.
Throw some titles at me.
Most of them you probably wouldn't know, but he's been in a movie called Bringing Out the Dead with Nicolas Cage, from the looks of it. He was in 6 Days and Seven Nights. He was in Avatar 4, which is coming out in 2029. What? That's a future movie. He was in Fracture with Anthony Hopkins. He was in Three Kings, which I vaguely remember.
Oh, I love that movie. That movie is great.
Yeah, from 1999. He was in Deep Rising.
Oh, Three Kings is the one. It's got it's got George Clooney in it.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah. And Wahlberg and Ice
Jamie
Cube.
Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah. He's also allegedly going to be in Avatar 5 in 2031.
That's, I will believe it when I see it. If James Cameron doesn't die in the Marianas Trench before then.
Yeah. Another sea guy.
And big time ocean guy, James Cameron. It.
He was in Blow.
Was he?
Maybe apparently. James Cameron is the god of the sea.
And Live Free or Die Hard.
Would that surprise you if like all of a sudden there was this headline in the New York Times that was like, James Cameron is Poseidon.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It's like the seventh weirdest thing that's happened in 2025.
James Cameron accidentally reveals Trident.
Yeah. Yeah. He has much more of a Hades energy, James Cameron.
Interesting.
Yeah. I love the deep.
If you told me that there were Greek gods running around, I'd be like, All right. Okay.
Mm.
I don't think that would shock. I don't think that would be like a shock to my worldview at this point.
Yeah. Who in the public eye do you think is most likely to be revealed to be a secret Greek god?
Jessica Alba.
Jessica Alba.
Mm.
That was such a quick answer.
Yeah, that was really quick for quite an abstruse question as well.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to have a think about you, Pat, because that was too quick.
I had been thinking about it as we were talking, and I'm like, incredibly good looking, very rich.
Mm-hmm.
Is she
any richer than like any no longer in things actor?
Yeah, because she has like an empire of like overpriced wellness products. She's made far more money from that. The Honest company.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's Jessica Alba's company.
Right, the kings of Jessica Alba Longa.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah, so I would say she's the first one who comes to mind. Okay. I would also say if I found out tomorrow that Peter Thiel was Count Dracula, I would believe that.
Oh, yeah.
That's entirely believable something to me.
He's not.
Nosferatu. Hmm. Yeah, well, he does. There is a blood connection creature there, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. So, or some other kind of, like, if you told me that Elon Musk was, like, a lesser demon who'd escaped from hell, I'd be like, yeah, tracks.
Oh, yeah, he's too dumb. I was thinking about this earlier today, just how much I fucking hate Elon Musk, but it's in the way I hate, like, an annoying dog.
Yeah. But that's why he's a lesser demon. He couldn't even get like the middle management in hell.
He's not even a high up demon. Yeah. He's got all the powers of hell at his disposal. He still can't land a joke.
Mm.
Yeah, he's like Jason Lee in fucking Dogma. Elon Musk.
Asriel.
Yeah.
Every time Elon Musk says a new thing, it's like a dog humping my leg. I'm like, oh, fuck off, man.
Fuck off, man.
Did you see how fucking dilated his eyes were?
On me. Why is it done that?
did you see how dilated his eyes were in the Oval Office with Trump?
I did not.
That man was on more drugs than any human being has ever been in public.
Oh.
It was insane.
Well, I don't know about any human being. Maybe any human being in the Oval Office.
believe me, like, I want you to look at a still picture of Elon Musk's eyes from yesterday and tell me honestly that you have seen a person on more drugs in public.
We're getting sued by Ozzy Osbourne for implying that there's someone who's been on more drugs in public than him.
Ozzy, honest to God, does not have anything on the amount of fucking ketamine and speed Musk was on.
Well, someone did this. Not see me in the dolphin after the 2017 election, clearly.
Yeah. Okay, so
I'm doing a government efficiency drive, Sharon.
So, Musk listened to some episodes of Tides of History and tweeted them.
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
Oh, I didn't know.
And
this.
He did last year. It's the most embarrassing moment of my life, number one. Number two,
Musk, no, get out of the table, Elon. Fucking stop. Stop showing people your weirdly stiff balls.
Yeah, I'm sure he does have weirdly stiff balls. But it was the moment that confirmed to me that he is in fact a dullard, because the episodes were on the Peloponnesian War and he managed to completely miss the explicit argument that I made over and over and over again in the episodes. Like, his takeaway was like, war's pretty cool, guys. Like, you fucking dumbass. You absolute dullard fool.
We should have more wars named after mountain ranges.
Yeah.
I was just like, this fucking guy. And all of the most annoying MAGA dads at my school have learned that Elon Musk has listened to my show. And now, like, three times a week, I have to be like, yeah, no, Elon Musk. Yeah.
No, you wouldn't like it. You wouldn't like it. No. Get down.
Elon Musk is trying to organize a meeting with Thucydides.
Down. Come on, in your bed, Elon. In your bed.
Do you know how much Thucydides would hate Elon Musk?
Probably quite a lot. Thucydides hated everyone, though. Like, this doesn't feel like a high bar to clear.
Mm.
Thucydides is like one of history's bigger haters, if you ask me.
Mm. He was. That's true.
He loved to hate. Like,
he was good at it.
Yeah, watching that halftime show, being like, yeah. This is pretty good hating. This is nothing on Thucydides. That's what I said.
I don't know, man. I think Kendrick Lamar would be a great ancient Greek historian. Because you're right. Absolutely right. Thucydides, Xenophon, also a pretty solid hater. Yep. But the greatest hater of them all, Polybius. Polybius was an outstanding hater. Polybius was such a
powered
hater.
By he hate. Attributed Polybius his hate was just to like, fortune. Was just like, people don't realize this. Polybius was just like a head. Like his body was like dissolved by hatred, but he was kept mm-hmm. alive by his hating.
Yeah. It's a head with little feet remarkable.
Like scuttling around.
Yeah, you can, so I've been reading a bunch of Polybius lately for episodes that I'm writing on the Punic Wars, and Polybius starts the beginning of the first surviving book with like, okay, here's how the Romans left Italy and crossed over to Sicily in the first battle that they fought. And then it's a 3-page digression on how he hates a guy named Philinus. It's three full pages of text about how much he hates this pro-Carthaginian historian. And it's Polybius like dismantling the guy's narrative and talking about all the other sources that he read and how this guy's full of shit, so you shouldn't listen to Philinus, and then back to the narrative. Like it's frankly remarkable. I'm like, this is
hating of that level until Dante. And what is so good about the haters of the ancient world is every single one of them does ancient and medieval, to be honest with you. Every single one of them does exactly the opposite of what they wanted to do, which is that they preserve their ops in a way that would never have happened otherwise. Like, there is no way in whatsoever that we would know the names of like minor Florentine officials who like pissed Dante off, but because they pissed him off and because he put them in his work, we now know who they are. One of life's little ironies. Okay, so I feel like we're running pretty close to time.
Yeah.
So I'm just gonna read my complaints about this episode.
Mm-hmm. Martin Luther speaking, style. Let's get into him.
Yeah.
Speaking of haters, let's go.
Yeah,
Phoebe.
Exactly. It's, you know what? It's Phoebe's hater corner. It's time to drink the haterade.
That's right.
I actually love that we're doing this as a regular thing now at the end of every episode. Like, no, lay it on us.
It's time for the complaints. Okay, so Anatole and Orpheus's progress is being watched in a sports bar. Again, given that this whole episode is about explaining some technicalities, I kind of feel like if this was like a kind of known thing, people being sent to the underworld after their audience with fate in order to try and get someone back, and this is like what passes for a kind of spectator sport in this society, you got to say that first, because like honestly it's not a bad idea, it works quite well, and it also like it's quite good information about like how they find out what has like what's happened like kind of at, like earthside, but for some reason this is the first we've heard of it. Anatole's wife is not very happy and punches Dionysus in the face, so that's not a complaint strictly, but anyway, so Orpheus is kind of struggling through the desert. Like, there's no water to drink. Like, he tries to drink from a well and like just like starts like coughing up blood. And he sees like the face of Anatole being like, so that's like, you know, kind of pretty standard stuff. Oh yeah, again, if we're doing technical explanations, why are the dead people sleeping and having meals? Why is Riddy like sleeping in bed? Like, why is that? Like, why is that? Like, why is that happening?
We do have fucking?
Like, why are they fucking? We do have this. We do have a bit of an explanation of that, which is like that people have to like carry on with their like normal routines in order to like feel more normal when they're dead. But nah, that's not.
Well,
good
it's
enough.
Like a treatment for being depressed.
Yeah, like it's not. That's not really.
I know you don't want to eat and exercise, and
but
you know,
you gotta
but that
make
you will
yourself,
actually feel better,
and then it'll start to, you know, kind of yeah, like a fucking behavioral activation therapy or whatever it's called. But there's no point doing that because they're still dead. Also, as Milo pointed out, if the whole point of the frame is to feed the gods with the souls and no one actually goes through, then why do the people without coins have to wait for 200 years? That also doesn't make any sense. It's like it's like the first half of the script was destroyed and they were having to rewrite it on the bus on the way into day one of filming from memory.
Yeah, yeah, there was a lot of filler.
A lot of like, it's wait, what do we say
Byzantine
about...
Byzantine historian vibes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I did wonder why the script started with a huge A.
Yeah. This is like, yeah, this is like Anna Karenina. Also a great hater was Anna Karenina.
Very one of the more extraordinary ones.
One of the pioneering female haters, the original girl boss Anna Karenina. So we have some
top female haters.
Top female haters, yeah. We have some flashbacks to the young Kneas, which I thought was in the last episode, but it wasn't. Where his friend like shows up and tries to persuade him to come out as trans to his mother, and it's sort of quite a kind of like, it's sort of quite a sort of fun, like kind of, okay, well, like his mother's like really, really accepting, but she also like then gives him up to be executed. So it's like, maybe not that great. I think it's a little bit strange to have Persephone as Hades's loving, supportive wife and not have any of the context of how she has come to be the queen of the underworld. Because that, again, like if you're going to do this whole like, God's a fucking awful man, surely that goes in there somewhere. Surely.
Yeah, that one deserves a spot.
That deserves a little bit of backstory, a little bit of exposition. No, I think it probably does. Yeah, so Zeus's prophecy, according to Prometheus, doesn't foretell that he's going to become immortal. But Zeus was always a god. Like the story of Zeus and the Olympians overthrowing Kronos and the rest of the Titans is that it's a kind of new generation of god. It's like a kind of god expansion pack, which like undermines the old gods. It doesn't mean that Zeus is not stupid. It's stupid.
It's deified DLC.
Yeah, exactly. So Zeus is going to get Minos to kill the Minotaur, right? Which would defy the prophecy, because the prophecy says that the Minotaur has to kill him, which is a little bit unclear as to why he's keeping the Minotaur alive. Have we explained how the sweet little boy, little Glaucus, has wound up with the head of a bull? No, we have not had that explained to us, because why would we? So Zeus has decided that if Minos is able to kill the Minotaur, thus defying his prophecy, then that means that Zeus, will then be safe from his prophecy, even though that doesn't logically follow at all in any way, shape, or form. It just means that one guy has managed to do it, right? It might make it more possible that Zeus... Yeah. Rhydi and Caenus' prophecies are the same, which is meant to be impossible. They're shagging. This is supposed to be in a kind of interesting subplot, but it's not an interesting subplot, and also it undermines the central story that the whole show is meant to be about, which is that Orpheus and Eurydice are in love with each other. Why is she shagging other people? It makes no sense. Why is Hades from Yorkshire? There's another complaint that I've got.
Come down to Underworld.
Come down to Frame.
Tell you what, you were born in shoebox. I were born in black and white.
So I've got another thing which I think that it's like a little bit stolen from. I feel like it's a little bit stolen from the Amber Spyglass, that the prophecies of Caenus and Rhydi are going to stop people coming through the frame and thereby defeat the gods who are like tricking people into believing in them, and except they're not tricking people into believing in them because they do exist. They're just there.
They are gods. They
are gods, and they do have powers. So what is the trick exactly? The trick is the propitiation, but the propitiation, as has been amply demonstrated, doesn't mean anything. They don't care about the propitiation. All they care about is getting the souls through the frame so that they can drink them. But here is my objection. People are going to die anyway. They could just do that. There's no actual requirement for people to continue propitiating the gods and thinking that there's a better life waiting for them after the frame. That's not an element of it. That doesn't feed the gods or make them immortal. That doesn't do anything. All that does is like feeds the gods' vanity, but there's no suggestion that the gods' immortality and the gods' powers are tied to their vanity or tied to their worship, like in any way. All they need is for humans to keep dying, right? Mm. Which they're going to do anyway.
Yeah.
Which they're going to do anyway. Yeah, it makes no sense.
But then you'd have to go to the underworld and you'd have to suck the souls out manually, and that's just it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. But then
Siphoning the souls out with a big tube.
The gods could have just been chilling up on the mountain in their compound for thousands of years and still have the industrialized process and the frame. The human relationship to the gods and the human understanding of the gods and the statues and the altars and all of that stuff is irrelevant. They could have just stayed being in another complaint I've got is, why don't the gods know more stuff?
Okay, this one I actually buy, and I'll tell you why. Because there is nobody more boring than rich and powerful people. The absolute incuriosity of people who have authority over others and who kind of revel in that power, they're not interesting. They don't care about things. They don't want to know more about the world because it doesn't matter to them. That's the most offensive thing.
That makes sense. My complaint is that they keep having to have information fed back to them. Like, why don't they just know it? They're gods.
Yeah.
Why aren't they kind of keeping track? So with the section where they explain the frame and the fountain of youth, which is connected to the frame somehow, I've just put, okay, what the fuck are you talking about? Another objection, why do some of the mythical beasticles have jobs and some of them don't? Like, why does Medusa have a job?
Yep. For the health insurance.
You've got to look after your snakes.
When you've got snakes for hair, honestly, the medical bills are, it's not all glamour.
Well, because you've got to go to the doctor and the vet.
That's right. Yeah. it's two lots of bills.
And now we've come full circle to our initial conversation about fingernail clipping.
Yeah, that's right. So I think they absolutely are suggesting that Dionysus is meant to be functionally a good guy and is trying to help and not deliberately trying to make Orpheus be mental, which I think is a failure in the characterization. Medusa and Charon both seem quite excited that the prophecy is coming true, but again, why would they be? I mean, they're not part of the human world. Like, it makes no odds to them that if the gods are going to fall. And then my final complaint is, why would Dionysus be shocked at Hera and Poseidon shagging? He's not very convincing as the god of revelry and madness, is he?
No, Dionysus should be like, ah.
Yeah, great. Ah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
My stepmother shagging her brother and brother-in-law at the same time. This is a kind of double whammy. It's like...
Literally and figuratively.
It's Pornhub efficiency. Is what Hera is is up to.
You've broken me. You've broken me.
Pornhub efficiency.
On that note.
On that bombshell. It's probably as good a time as any to wrap up.
Yeah.
This has been a Patreon one, I believe. Yeah, episode 6. It's an even number, so it's a Patreon one, I reckon. Thank you very much for being a Patreon subscriber. You're the best. You keep the show ticking over. Without you, it would not be possible for us to have this many thoughts at such length about the show chaos. So thank you for that.
So really, you're out there doing the God's work.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You are propitiating us.
Mm.
And we are drinking your souls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. We are the fickle gods of this podcast. And you are mollifying us with your Patreon subscriptions, so thank you.
To the Godcast.
That's right. That probably already exists, isn't it? The Church of England's official podcast, Godcast.
The Godcast. Oh my God, there's a lot we could do with that, but as we're at the end of today's episode, we'll have to save that one for next week.
Yeah, but we will see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.